Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down for joy shouting, "Yes, I'm in." Now, before turning to today's guest, I would like to remind you that I answer your questions on the show. If you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com and post your question as a comment. You can also send me questions via email to questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. I'm pleased to say that we're developing a supportive, collaborative, and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to comment, share a concern, or whatever. Now to our guest. Student Dr. Diva, a.k.a. Martini Jacobs, is an M1 at the West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine. In a recent blog post on Accepted's blog, which we'll link to from the show notes at info.accepted.com/102, Martini describes herself as a, quote, girly medical student who is obsessed with the color pink and glitter. At the same time, don't mess with her. She's done a lot more than wear a pink stethoscope. Again from the interview, and I'm quoting, "Don't be confused, though. I've completed a tough mutter, ran track all 4 years of undergrad, and played volleyball and basketball as well as gymnastics from the time I was 3 years old until college. So I'm kind of a tomboy, too. I'm really looking forward to chatting with Martini, and I'm glad you can listen in. Martini, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk."
Hi, Linda. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Now, some pre-meds choose osteopathic medical schools because they couldn't get in elsewhere or didn't think they could get in elsewhere. And I guess it's kind of a secondhand rose option for them. I sense that you chose the osteopathic path because it appeals to you. Am I correct?
Yes, partly. Okay. I applied to 3 in-state schools. I went to a small Division II college, and I really wanted that big school experience. So actually, this school was not my first choice. WVU was my first choice,
okay.
And Marshall was my second. And this was actually my third choice, but I'm extremely blessed to be here, given my MCAT score, which is another story.
Okay.
I actually shadowed a DO, and that's how I learned about osteopathic medicine.
And are you, again, from your blog, a little bit of blogging that I read, it seemed like you were actually excited about the osteopathic approach to medicine. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, 100%. I love it. I think everything happens for a reason. There's a reason I'm here, and I didn't get in to those places, but now that I've been here and studied osteopathic medicine, it really fits my beliefs, and I love the whole holistic approach, you know, treating the patient, not the disease, looking at the entire patient, and I really love osteopathic manipulative medicine and treatment and how you can heal with your hands. I've actually had some wonderful experiences in the clinic being able to help patients stand and walk out of the office, which they couldn't do before they got there, which is awesome.
through manipulation?
Yeah.
And in a positive sense, in the physical sense, not the non-physical sense of manipulation. Yeah.
Right. No, I just had a patient that came in. She was diagnosed with psoas syndrome. And it was, her psoas muscle was tight. We actually did counter strain on it, shortened the muscle, reset the contractions, and in 90 seconds, she was able to walk out the door, and she came in walking all hunched over and in so much pain. It was just remarkable seeing how you could help a patient in that way.
And no drugs, no invasive anything.
Right. It's just, I really like it because it's an added benefit, you know, another tool that you can use as a physician, as well as, you know, if they need medication or labs, you know, surgeries.
So it's something more for your toolkit.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read on your Instagram account that you recently became one of the 18 students accepted into the Rural Health Initiative program at the West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine. First of all, congrats. That's fantastic. And can you tell us a little
Thank
bit about
you.
This program?
Yeah, the Rural Rural Health Initiative Program. It's a state-funded program, and it's it helps improve student interest and exposure to rural practice. Mm-hmm. Basically, it recruits students from rural areas if they have interest in primary care. There's 44 students right now, and I was one of the 18 selected this year. What's great about it, there's a lot of benefits. They offer financial scholarships your third and fourth years during rotations. They also give you a physician mentor, which I really like, and they follow you through your clinical years as well as into residency. And they also help with helping you get into a residency, and they offer, I think, loan forgiveness education and access to that. But it gives us unique opportunities that I probably wouldn't have gotten. Next year, I think we get to go to a logging site or a coal mining site and learn how, medicine's practiced in that area, in the rural communities, and how they're underserved.
Now, you're from West Virginia, right?
Yes.
And do you intend to stay in West Virginia?
I do think I want to stay here. My family's here. You know, I've grown up here all my life. It's where all my connections are, my friends. They don't call it wild and wonderful for no reason. Uh-huh. I think it's a great state. And, I plan on staying here, as long as I can.
And you want to go, do you want to go into rural med? I assume you do, because that's kind of seems the direction you're headed, or do you know yet?
I do. I think, obviously I'm not 100% sure, but mm-hmm. I do want to stay in rural medicine just because I've grown up and I realize how important it is to come back and serve, and how they're just, there's not a lot of access to health care, and it really is. The doctor shortage is very prominent in those areas. I have an experience firsthand. Whenever my sister was younger, she was diagnosed with bacterial meningitis at six weeks old.
Ooh.
And the hospital is 45 minutes away, the closest hospital.
Yeah.
So it's just, they really need physicians in those areas, and,
Now that's a challenge faced by, patients and potential patients. What are some of the distinctive challenges faced by physicians in rural areas? I've lived in Los Angeles all my life, so I know the urban challenges. I don't know the rural ones.
Yeah, pretty different, I'd say.
Yeah.
For doctors, I think one of the main problems that they face is access. Where I grew up, there was your primary care provider, and then which is in the clinic, and then if a hospital was close, there was just like a ER doctor, uh-huh. And it was just those two managing. There was no specialists, so they are really limited in that aspect. Also, I think the physician retention rate and the recruitment is low in those areas. When you think about it, you don't want to just pick up and move your family to a area that, there's not a lot of opportunities there. It's sometimes poverty-stricken, mm-hmm. Low population. And I think staffing, that's a really big issue they have too. And also, the hospitals are smaller, so I don't think they have a greater chance to offer competitive pay as would a larger hospital. I think that could play a part.
Yeah, it too. Probably does, right. Now, I would like to go back a little bit. Now, you mentioned that your GMAT was a challenge. I'm sorry, your MCAT was a challenge, rather. And
right.
I know you faced some other challenges once you got into medical school. Let's go back, though. Now, obviously, you overcame the MCAT, and you got into the medical school that you're in. You got into West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine. What do you think you had done, or how do you think you presented yourself in a way where you did get in?
I think I was extremely well-rounded besides the flaw in the MCAT. I had a great GPA. It was like a 3.85, a biology major, graduated with honors, and I was a college athlete. And I think that was one of the main points that got me in, was the fact that I could balance and manage my time so wisely and how I had experience with that. But I shadowed, I volunteered a lot, but I don't, the MCAT was my biggest flaw in that whole process.
Do you want to say what the MCAT is, or
I don't have a problem. I hate to admit this, but I got a 19 on it. Don't judge me.
I definitely will not judge you. I know it's a very, very difficult job, very, very difficult exam. So, okay. Yeah. And I think in some case your story is really inspirational because you did struggle with the GMAT and you struggled a little later too. And yet now you're being honored with this Rural Healthcare Initiative. So at the risk of dredging up painful memories, you've also written on your blog about your somewhat rocky start in medical school. And I'm wondering if you can tell us about that experience.
Sure. I remember getting the call that I got accepted like it was yesterday. They called me actually the day orientation had already started. And they called me that afternoon and offered me a position. Of course, I dropped down to my knees and, you know, thanked God and was so excited, but I still had to go to my job. I was a waitress at that time. I had 24 hours to quit my job. They told me to be on campus the next day, if I could, at 8 a.m. So I had 24 hours, quit my job, pack everything up, move 3 hours away, and I was really excited. That was just it was nerve-wracking, but that's how it happened. And so that was the beginning of it.
That was the fun beginning.
It kind of, that was the rocky start from the get-go. So it kind of escalated, and I passed my first course, did well, not so well, but I passed it, which was good enough for me at that time.
Sure.
I didn't really know how to study. I didn't have to study a lot in college. I went to just a public school, small Division II school, and it wasn't too challenging for me, but my best friend in the world, she died in September. That hit me hard. I had a lot of trouble focusing and concentrating, and obviously I had to travel home for funeral arrangements and stuff. I ended up failing that course by 1 point, which is basically one question on a test.
Right.
So that kind of put me in bad spirits. I was disheartened and a little discouraged. And then 2 months later in November, my grandmother died. And she was more like my mom. Mm-hmm. She was my main mother figure in my life. She died from complications from a hip replacement. So it wasn't like she was a, little old 80-year-old woman. She was 50, 55.
Oh, wow, that's young.
So that was really surprising, and that just threw me. I was like, okay. And then I didn't end up passing that course either. I failed it by 2 points, which, again, not that much, but it's in medical school, you have to be all in or all out, and I decided I need to take personal leave and take some time.
So what did you do?
I traveled. Mm-hmm. I went to Texas. I went to Miami. I actually took a class in the summer, Ryan Orwig from the STAT program, and I also worked with Prometheus on learning how to study efficiently, and that has taken me from C's to now A's and B's.
You're getting scholarship money in the Rural Healthcare Initiative and all that.
Yeah, it just did a world of difference, and it also helps that I'm completely here. I'm focused, ready to go, fully motivated. I don't have all those outside influences. And my support system is great. That's really helped me too.
That's wonderful. What are some of the changes you made in your studying that you feel really has helped you?
I study now 50 minutes on, and then I take a 10-minute break. Mm-hmm. I never would do that before. I would study all day, and it was like a marathon. And I didn't realize how inefficient I was being when I would check my phone or get online, and that's like it leads to a rabbit hole. So I stay on track. I also keep the schedule of my week, and I plot down ideally what I want to do. I have it down to the hours of the day, mm-hmm. and I'll plot what I really did so I can see where my time is, where I'm wasting my time. That helps a lot. I also do a process called frameworking, which is basically like outlining before attending the lecture. And sometimes in those biochem lectures and physio, you get so lost. And doing that beforehand really gives me a grip on the big picture of the lecture before I even go into it.
Wow.
And I don't even have to listen to the lecture, and I can tell you what's being talked about, what's important. So that's really helped too.
I don't know how I had friends who outlined lectures after class. I don't remember anybody attempting to outline it before the class.
Well, I only take 10 minutes. There's no more than 10 minutes is allowed for each 50-minute hour lecture. Mm-hmm. And I just basically flip through. I don't read anything. I just read topics, link them together. And it's like a concept map or outline, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really helpful.
Great.
But I think the main helpful tool that I use is drawing. I'm not the best drawer, but I think I posted a couple pictures. Like storage pool diseases, the gray platelet syndrome. I was drawing gray platelets diving into a swimming pool. It's just silly stuff that helps you remember.
Memorize. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm reading right now Moonwalking with Einstein, which is about memory. This reporter decided to participate in a memory contest, and he's talking about all kinds of memorization techniques. I'm not sure. It's like I'm not giving up on the book. I'm not sure I'm that interested in the topic intrinsically I'm enjoying it. But he certainly writes well, and it's interesting the techniques that people use to memorize all kinds of things. But certainly one of them would be visualizing related concepts that are again either visualizing, smelling, hearing, using the senses basically to make things more vivid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like best about medical school?
I love being able to work with the patients already in the first year.
Okay.
I love it. And it reminds me why I'm here, and it makes all those long hours and sleepless nights just worth it. That's my favorite aspect. Also, I like doing or learning all the different techniques in the osteopathic medicine world community. And, those are my favorite so far.
And what about how much patient time interaction do you have in, say, your first and second, your first year now, right? You're in M1. Because normally patient rotations are third and fourth year.
Right. We actually started seeing patients our second week of school. I mean, they were standardized, but they were teaching us how to take a history and listen to the patient and ask, our open-ended questions. But so far, we shadow a physician twice, once each semester for 2 or 3 hours, I think.
Per week?
And no, just once. But we do get standardized patient encounters, which is like once a week. Even though they're standardized, it's still
cool. Right. When you talk about standardized, does that mean it's an actor or what makes them standardized?
Yes.
Okay.
An actor. So they're taught what to say, how to answer things, and it's just standardized across the board.
Uh-huh. I see. All right. And do you have any real patient interactions prior to the third year or not?
Yeah. Where we go and shadow the physician.
Oh, all
we
right.
Actually
sure.
Take,
yeah.
It's coattailing. We take the history. We can do the physical exam. It depends on how far you've gone throughout the semester and how nice or mean your doctor is. They want to make you do a bunch of stuff. I actually did some osteopathic treatment on one of the ladies, and she had Meniere's disease, and we did a treatment, and it helped with her dizziness and the ringing of her ears. So
wow.
Yeah.
That is neat.
Mm-hmm.
You were, obviously from the way I started, you were very active all your life, and you seem to have varied interests. Do you have time for hobbies, exercise, and life outside of medical school, and how do you find it, create it, maintain it?
I do. It's not as much as I would like, obviously, but the way I work, doing that schedule really helps me see where I can spend time and I can't. So I'll plot, like an hour, half hour for the gym, 4 to 5 times a week.
Uh-huh.
I'll plot, it's like free time or R&R. I'll have it on my schedule.
Uh-huh.
And like every Tuesday we go with my friends, or we all go to wing night, which is awesome. I really enjoy that. I look forward to it. And I go out sometimes after exams. I usually go home for every break because I only live 3 hours from here.
Mm-hmm.
And or some weekends, you know, it really is about how efficient you are studying. If you can get whatever you need done in a short period of time, you have a lot more time to enjoy life outside of medicine, which, you know, I like that aspect. So
it makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. I do my best to work hard and efficient so I can, you know, enjoy life a little bit.
Sounds good. Do you have any idea of what residency you want to go into or what direction you want to take in your rotations?
I like everything. That's why I feel like I'm swaying more towards family medicine. Uh-huh. I really like the fact that I can take care of a patient from the time they're born to, you know, in their elderly ages. And I like sports medicine too. You know, I've been an athlete all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I want a specialty that I can use my osteopathic manipulative treatment every day as mm-hmm. an added tool, you know, because in surgery, obviously you can't do that if I decided to specialize in surgery, but which is what I used to want to do.
Really?
But yeah. So basically, primary care, I guess, is the umbrella. I'm not sure yet.
Okay, sounds good. Now, you mentioned what you like about medical school. We've discussed that a lot. What don't you like about medical school?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I hope you're not going to say we don't have enough time to discuss it, but I mean...
Our school actually does team-based learning. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's have you heard of that?
Yes. Yeah, but
okay.
I'll tell you what, if you could describe it briefly, that would be great.
Okay, so people that have never heard of it, it is basically you come in, this is how it works at our school. You take an individual quiz, which is about 10 questions, and then you take a team quiz together, which is the same 10 questions. And then you discuss those answers or what you got right, what you got wrong. And then it moves on to an application exercise, which they give you a case study and the answers, and you pick. And usually there is not a correct answer. They're all correct or based on which doctor would do this step first or this step. So, and they really influence you or promote you to argue back and forth and discuss. And I hate those things. I think they're a big waste of time. thankfully, we don't have them very much this semester, but I just don't like to argue. And some people, you know, like to talk.
Yeah.
And just hear themselves talk.
So that's not your idea of an efficient use of time, huh?
No, I would get rid of those if I could.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, in your interview for Acceptance Blog, you advised pre-meds, in other words, those people in college now thinking about medical school, and you were very emphatic about it, to do what makes you happy, period. Why did you give that advice, and what about the need for high-grade science requirements, research, clinical exposure, and all that pre-med stuff if they're doing what makes them happy?
I think that's one of the most important topics I could have ever spoken about. If you're not happy doing something, why do it? You know, and I've gotten so many questions on my blog and through Twitter about how student pre-meds, pre-dental, pre-PA, whichever, they don't think they're going to get in because they're not a bio major or a chem major, and they really wish they could do this other major like music or art, and they can't. And so they're sacrificing their happiness in order to be something that they don't really want to be. And I just think it's really important that they understand that do what makes you happy. Don't just do it because you think that's what others want you to do or you have to do it. Also with that, I don't think that they should do things specifically just for a resume or CV, what have you. And I know this because I was one of them. And I wasn't happy doing all these different jobs, and it's basically just a list of things just to put on my application. And now that I think about it, and I guess I've matured a little bit, that's not you know, you don't, that's the wrong reason for wanting to do things. And I just, I, you know, people don't realize that they can do whatever they want, obviously with standards, but they can major in music or art, or they can go out with their friends. And as long as you do have, you know, good grades, do okay on your MCAT, have all the requirements in order to get in. And I just think, I just see a lot of miserable people, and I don't know, it makes me sad.
Right. No, I completely agree with you. The other thing is that some of the requirements, like some of the clinical exposure, or the not so much the research, the clinical exposure in particular, or the suggestion to get involved in extracurricular activities or take leadership roles, if you don't enjoy those activities, then what makes you think you're going to be involved and be happy as a doctor? Because doctors are in clinical settings. They are taking care of patients. They are frequently in leadership roles. Again, research, I think, is genuinely an optional element. You don't have to love research or do research to be a good physician.
Right. So I did research. I loved doing research, actually.
That's great. that's fine. I'm not opposed.
Yeah. But I just, you know, they see, like, that's something I love to do. And, you know, I wrote about it and talked about it in my interview. And I just think that's really important. Your happiness is really important.
Yeah. And the other part, to respond to the other part of your comment, if you are as long as you take the requirements, and as Martini said, you do well on those requirements, if you're a music major or a lit major or a history major or some non-classic pre-med major, it's going to make you different. It's going to help distinguish
exactly.
you in the applicant pool. So not only will you be happier and more well-rounded, but you're going to have better chances. What were you about to say, Martini?
Oh, it just how that medical school wants variety. They like to see that. I was kind of like a cookie cutter, which I thought that was how you're supposed to be. That's what my pre-med...
I somehow can't imagine you as a cookie cutter. I'm sorry.
I mean, the cookie cutter, like the bio major, the good GPA, you know, did so-and-so hours in this and involved in all these clubs. And that's what I meant by, like, standard, my major.
Right.
Uh-huh. But, yeah.
I just, like I said, I read your blog, some of your tweets. I don't think you quite fit a cookie cutter. But in terms of the bio major or the compulsion to be a bio major or some heavy science major, if that is what you love, then great, fine. But if you would really like to take the opportunity to major in something else like music or whatever, I agree with Martini. Go do what you love.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, at this point, Martini, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great. I really enjoyed talking to you. Where can listeners find your blog and your favorite social media hangouts?
They can find me on Twitter at StudentDrDiva and Instagram, same name, mm-hmm. and also on WordPress. I think it's studentdrdiva.wordpress.com.
Okay, and we'll link to those spots on the web from info.accept.com/102. Listener, I also want to thank you for joining me and Martini for the webcast today. And again, you can find the show notes with links to this show and Martini's blog post on Accepted and her blog on WordPress at info.accept.com/102. I want to, I also have a favor to ask of listeners. If you found this show helpful, please share your perspective on iTunes. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. Doing so helps potential listeners find us and is very much appreciated on this end. And if you have a question, as I said earlier, or you just want to comment on the show, please feel free to do so in a comment at info.accepted.com/102 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Finally, if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zune. And again, there are links at the show notes. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted.com, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.